1, 2, 3.
You're listening to Sports Talk Chicago with your host, John Zagluhl.
John, I am fantastic. Thank you for having me. You got an awesome voice, man, and that was a terrific intro. You're like a pro's pro.
You know, that was the first time somebody ever said that, John. No, you're the first person to ever say anything like that. That's very interesting.
You got it, John. Anything for a fellow Chicago guy.
Well, what a great question.
That's a great question. Nobody's actually asked me that.
I like it. What a great question. I never heard that before.
Chase Utley is what? You're saying he's not a Hall of Fame candidate?
You know, it's funny. You may be the only person that I've heard make that connection.
Thank you, John, for having me. I'm doing great. By the way, you have an outstanding voice. Not sure about your face because I haven't met you, but your voice is great.
You're doing a much better job than I ever did. You've had some heavy hitters guests on too, man, so keep up the good work. But it's good to be with you, and I'm ready to talk sports.
Hello, everybody, and welcome into Sports Talk Chicago. My name's John Zagluhl. Great to have you here. Today's edition of the program, the Bears and Packers face off this weekend. We'll give you a full preview in just a moment. Plus, a brand new interview today with Cole Wright, the host of Bear Essentials and Cubs pre- and post-game coverage on the Marquee Sports Network. Talk with him about some Cubs news, including the Marcus Stroman signing, and also some Bears football and what to expect for them for the rest of the year. It's a great interview, and it comes your way near the midway point of this show. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at John Z Sports and on Facebook at John Zagluhl. If you want to listen to more of this show, search up Sports Talk Chicago, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and SportsTalkChicago.com. I want to start today with this. Ever feel defeated? Ever feel like nothing's going your way? There's no chance anything will get better. Bears fans feel that way. It's been a long time coming. You could point to blips in the radar, 2018, 2010, 2006, early 2000s. But the fact of the matter is, they're defeated. They're apathetic. They don't care. Saw a couple of polls on Twitter. People asked, how do you feel after the Cardinals lost? Not really anger or sadness, apathy. Nobody cares. People are catching up. Nobody cares. This reminds me way too much of the end of Mark Trestman. Same thing. Players on the IR for no reason. No fans showing up. Bad team. Bad record. Trestman fired. John Fox comes in. Same results. Nothing changed. I feel defeated. I do. Everyone's shouted. Everyone's had their opinion be heard. Everyone's talked about in detail the problems with this team. And yet, as we sit here right now, no changes in sight. We hear rumors. Hey, it's Matt Nagy's last game, which is a joke. Hey, Ryan Pace is out the door. Hey, Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace could both be gone. Maybe one of them will go. We hear rumors. It excites us. But no change happens. Why is that? Remember last year, too? Rumors. Constant rumors. Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace are fired after this season. No, Mitch Trubisky was. Chuck Pagano was. Right, it was the defense's fault. The team didn't win last year. And Sean Desai hasn't fared much better. It's been about the same, really, defensive production. Why? Same roster. Aging roster, too. But I just find it funny. We all clamor for change. We point out inconsistencies. Point out the problems with the team. What needs to go? Who needs to stay? It's the same result every time. Nobody listens, and the team sucks. Now we sit at a point in the season where they're 4-8, going to face the Packers on the road this weekend. What am I supposed to say to you? I know you come here for analysis and opinions and hard-hitting takes, But really, what am I supposed to tell you? There's a chance to win. Now, some people say on Twitter, well, if Justin Fields does win it, because he'll be back, that'll be the win of the year. Sure. But do you think it's going to happen? There's a difference between putting up these false scenarios and them actually having a chance of happening, even a slim chance. There is no chance here. And I'd love it if it happened. I'd be so happy for Fields, seriously. Now he's gone all year, no O-line, not great play, bad coach. It'd be nice to end the year on a note like that. Start to end the year like that. I'd love to see it happen. Does anybody actually believe that's possible? Yep, you're a rational Bears fan, you know that's not going to happen. You're facing Aaron Rodgers again, who's having like an MVP season. Facing the division leader. You guys can't win 4-8. And even though last time was a 10-point game, it was Green Bay all the way. It was a dominant showing. The score doesn't really show how the game went. That was at home, too. This is primetime football. Fields and Rodgers. I love Justin Fields. I think he can still be a good quarterback, but you know what? Leads the league in fumbles. Second lowest passer rating in the NFL. Do you really think he's going to march into Lambeau with this Bears team, with this supporting cast and this coach, and pull off some sort of unbelievable upset? Get over yourself. You could float it as a possibility all that you want, but the fact is it's not going to happen. This is going to be a real tough loss for Bears fans to swallow. But then again, what did I say to start? Apathy. Who cares? I've lost feeling for this team, for their losses. That should be scary. The Bears management, the front office. People are losing feeling for their team. They're choosing to do something else. Talked to Tom Verducci this week. Talked about baseball's lockout. And he said, there are so many entertainment options out there. Baseball being locked out, even during the offseason, is going to make them lose fans. And lose coverage. In the moment, people will go somewhere else. No baseball content? Okay. I'll go to basketball. I'll go to football. Or I'll go do something else that has nothing to do with sports. There are so many options out there. So in management, the front office here, Bears fans are starting not to care. That should be a big red alarm. That should be a problem. Everybody has a choice. Everybody has options. You don't like the team? You don't like what's happening? You could leave. When people are losing feeling about a team like this with such a storied history, charter member, founding franchise, Walter Payton, Super Bowl, NFL championships back in the 30s, 40s, 50s. When it's 2021, you're losing feeling, and you don't care about a team like this. That is a red flag. That's a problem. You know what makes it worse? Again, people are expecting a loss, like last week. Nobody expected the Bears to win. They didn't. This weekend, Bears-Packers, big rivalry. Nobody expects them to win. That's a problem. What are they, the Jaguars? Texans? Have we gotten to a point where we just know it's going to be a loss? That's what you are. You're the Jaguars or the Texans, if that's your attitude about this. Throw the Bears into the mix. 4-8. And they've still got Minnesota twice. Seattle. The Giants. Maybe they'll win a couple of those games. Maybe 6-11, like I said, to start the year. What does that mean? I don't know if anyone remembers, but at the beginning of the year, Everybody said, not just me, these were experts, people on the team, coaches. This is about Justin Fields' development. An analyst said, it didn't matter really what the record was. Did Justin Fields develop? You tell me that today. Has Justin Fields developed? That's not a knock on him. It's a knock on team around him, coaching staff. Has he developed properly? Have they done everything in their power to make sure he'd be a good quarterback? Well, leads the league in fumbles, second worst passer rating. Knows the worst? Zach Wilson. Jets. So what do you think? Think the Bears have done everything they could to develop him? No. That to me signifies already, and it should signify, what the fate is for Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace. We were told. Doesn't matter about the record. Doesn't matter about how they play. Did Justin Fields develop? Right now, as of today, no. He's been worse off. What does that mean? It's time to make a change. When I see reports that, oh, Ryan Pace might stay and Nagy will go, what's the point? They both suck. You know, Ryan Pace is the one who gave Justin Fields a crappy O-line. Why is he not responsible, too? See, people forget about this stuff. Many of you probably forgotten the true point of this season. It was development. The whole argument was they could stay. Nagy and Pace could save their jobs if Justin Fields does good. The numbers tell a completely different story. That should mean, by default, they should both be canned. Immediately. There's nothing more to prove or to show. Matt Nagy does better with Andy Dalton, which, I don't know if that's sabotage, I don't know what it is, but it's the truth. Andy Dalton had 4 picks anyway. You know, people have to be held responsible for their actions. That's not just a football thing, a Bears thing, that's a life lesson. You make a mistake, there are going to be consequences. That's just how it works. Every decision you make, positive or negative, there are going to be consequences, good or bad. More importantly, the last time I checked, we live in a meritocracy. What does that mean? Well, I do good at my job, I get promoted, I get a raise, I get rewarded. If I don't, I'm fired. There are very few people in the world who do bad at their jobs and keep them. Like, very few. That's not usually a thing. Why does it work, though, with the Bears? Why does it work for years with the Bulls? It did, too. Gar Pax. Jim Boylan. Fred Hoiberg. I don't get it. Why is everyone okay with just mediocre? Not even saying fans, I'm saying management. Fans have called for the end of Nagy and Pace for a couple of years. It's not a fan thing. Everyone sees it. It's a management thing. They don't want to do it for whatever reason. And even think about this. As of today, ownership truly believes Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace give them the best chance to win. Think about that. And even after last year, Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace give us the best chance to win. That's what they said by keeping them around. Signaling. I mean, think about what kind of a slap in the face that is. That's what they believe. That's what they actually think. Oh, yeah, they're good enough to win. There's no one better. There's no one better. Nobody. Just had Cole Wright on. You'll hear it in a second. Cole Wright said Daniel Jeremiah or Lewis Riddick to be the GM. Fine by me. Somebody different. You can't say there's nobody better. And Ryan Pace has been given so much leeway. Been through 9 different quarterbacks. 9 different quarterbacks. 9 different ones have started a game under Ryan Pace. Look at Matt Nagy. 2018, first year, great year. And ever since then, it's been 500 or worse. That shouldn't be acceptable. Something needs to give here for this team, for their fans, for their players, for Justin Fields, even. If you're not going to do it for the fans and you say you don't care about your fans, fine. What about Justin Fields? Another young rookie quarterback. Putting up these horrible numbers. Don't you want to give him something to protect him? Maybe a new O-line, maybe a couple of weapons, something. That way he doesn't keep putting up 69 passer rating and 9 fumbles because you don't protect him. How about that? I'm just appalled at how this is all playing out. Not the Bears of all teams. The Bears are settling for mediocrity. They're okay with this. They're okay with Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy. They're okay with the direction of the organization. They're okay with being a laughingstock in the NFL. They're okay with being expected to lose in games against decent teams. Arizona, Green Bay. Shouldn't that sound an alarm? Shouldn't that be a cause for concern? Apparently to the Bears, it isn't. And until they see the problem, nothing's going to change. Now Nagy and Ryan Pace will be here for 10 years. Doesn't matter. Until the Bears acknowledge there's a problem, until they see, well, our quarterback isn't being developed properly. And that's why we have this head coach and this GM. Until they see and make that connection, nothing's going to change. As far as this weekend goes, don't get your hopes up, please. Don't say Justin Fields could win, it'll be the win of the year. Don't even give yourself that idea. We know what's going to happen. We know how it's going to go. It's going to be tearing and fleecing from Aaron Rodgers. It's going to be a joke of a game in prime time. It's going to be embarrassing. The only thing you can hope for at this point is that maybe it's so embarrassing that seals up Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace's fate as part of the Bears. More to come here on Sports Talk Chicago. My interview with Cole Wright comes up next, so stay tuned. Sports Talk Chicago. I'm John Zaglul, and we are back and ready for today's special guest. He's the host of Bear Essentials and Cubs pre- and post-game coverage on the Marquee Sports Network. Please welcome Cole Wright to the program. Cole, it's great to have you on. How are you?
I'm doing well, John. Thanks for having me, as always, man. Good to see you.
So, Cole, what was your reaction to the Marcus Stroman signing, first off?
You know, I was excited. I mean, anytime you see a competitor like that, I mean, you know, his mantra, his logo that he has on his glove, on his spikes, it's height doesn't measure heart. And when you see the way that guy competes and knowing what we know about him and his competitive spirit, I mean, to see that guy go out there in the World Baseball Classic and earn MVP honors, you know, in the W, and, you know, to see that, you know, he's a guy who went to Duke University. And not only did he pitch there well, he went back and he got his degree in sociology in 2016. So, you know, he's a guy who likes to finish business. So, you know, for him to come over to the Cubs and for him to now be a part of this storied franchise, I think he knows what lies ahead of him. And, you know, I think there's a lot of good things to come. If I'm not mistaken, he's 61-60 in his career. And I think he's looking to stay above 500 and go a whole bunch more games above 500 with the potential that this Cubs team has. And, you know, for him to be one of those front-end starters, one of those guys who can go out there every fifth day, I mean, he's durable. Last year, he was tied for the lead in Major League Baseball, 33 starts. That's what you want. You want a guy who you can toss that pill to every fifth day and say, hey, go get him. And there's really no doubt that Marcus Stroman, once he gets that ball, he's going to go out there and he's going to go get him.
Is he the consensus number one now for the Cubs, the number one of the rotation?
I mean, I don't know. I think based out of respect, I would still have to go with Kyle Hendricks just because of what he's done in a Cubs uniform. Maybe feel it out a little bit, tiptoe those waters, and see, it, does he throw up number one kind of pitcher stuff, or is it Kyle Hendricks? Who is it? I don't think you're really at a loss if either one of those guys is slotted into that, you know, that opening day start. Does it really matter? No. It could be Wade Miley, for all we know. I mean, Wade Miley went out there last year, threw a no-hitter, and every time he pitched against the Cubs, it seemed as if he had their number. So maybe we'll see Wade Miley number one. I don't think it really matters. I mean, when you have a bunch of solid arms, it's almost like a soup, a gumbo. When you throw it in that five-man rotation, doesn't matter where you get them, because if you take a big enough spoonful, you're going to get all of them. So if a team faces you in a four-game series, guess what? They just got a full spoon of that gumbo. So that's kind of where it looks to be right now, because it has to be performance-based, at least to me. I don't think Marcus Stroman, you know, would object to coming in and being, okay, I'm number two, maybe number three. It just depends on, you know, the righty, lefty, righty. I mean, that could be how it is. I mean, I'm sure that's something that David Ross said we'll have to speak with him about. But like I said, pick your poison, essentially, whether it's Marcus Stroman or Kyle Hendricks, you know, two different kinds of pitchers, a lot of the same results. So that's what you're looking for, especially when it comes to soft contact. I mean, Stroman is one of the best in all the game, man. I mean, he gets you to beat that ball into the grass. The next thing you know, he's making a Gold Glove kind of play, even though he wasn't a finalist for the Gold Glove last year. But you know, we'll talk about that at a different time, John.
Were you at all expecting this sort of big move from the Cubs?
Yeah, I kind of was, you know, because you know, Jed Hoyer and I, we spoke on numerous occasions during the offseason. And, you know, knowing what I know of Jed and, you know, having baseball conversations, numerous and multiple baseball conversations with him, he said, we're going to be smart in free agency. However, we're going to be aggressive. And I think that was a case of, let's see what some of these other teams do, and then let's make that essentially a byproduct of what we've seen so far. And, you know, for them to get Marcus Stroman, and, you know, I'd like to tip a cap to myself in the recruiting process when it comes to Marcus Stroman, because I think maybe it was October 5th, as soon as the season ended with, you know, I tweeted a GIF to Marcus Stroman of the Chicago skyline. And, you know, he retweeted it, he liked it, and next thing you know, Marcus Stroman's the newest member of the Chicago Cubs. So, it all started with that October 5th tweet that I sent out right there. So, if any Cubs fans, they want to send me, you know, edible arrangements, you know, maybe, you know, something from, you know, Lou Malnati's, those frozen pizzas, they travel well, be my guest. I mean, just send it up to the Marquee Studios, and we can go from there.
Cole Wright here on Sports Talk Chicago. Cole, how do you interpret this move for the Cubs? What are they going to be next year based on what they've done so far?
Well, if you look at what they have right now, I mean, I think they can be very competitive within the NL Central. And that's what we saw with them last year, obviously, until that Jason Hayward home run that was not a home run was called not a home run at Dodger Stadium. And that was the day after the combined no-hitter. And then the Cubs go on that downward spiral. So they were competitive all the way until the middle of June. And that was with a lot less than what they expect to have, you know, once the first pitch is finally thrown in 2022. So I think this team can compete. And, you know, am I biased? Absolutely. I watch them every day. I know what kind of talent they have. And sometimes when you see that talent, you become enamored with that talent. And you say, okay, look at these guys. If these guys do this, then this can happen. And that's always a big, you know, big waiting game. You know, it's a roll of the dice, you know, if you play that if-then game. But you know, I look at what this team has and I look at some of the potential. If you add some of those big pieces to the puzzle, I mean, there could be some pretty special things happening on the north side of Chicago. And, you know, it's, you know, with the lockout and baseball being shut down with the expiration of the CBA, you know, that kind of left some question marks out there. And Carlos Correa, you know, we've heard his interest in a certain few teams. We also heard Carlos Correa and his comments about Derek Sanderson Jeter. So people that say, hey, maybe Carlos Correa is going to go be a Yankee, I mean, I'm sure they would love his services because of what he displays when he's out there on the field. However, I mean, you have to say Derek Jeter's a top five Yankee, right? I mean, do you go Gehrig, Ruth, Mantle, Jeter, DiMaggio? So, I mean, for no disrespect to Carlos Correa, but maybe this works in the Cubs' favor. You know, for him to poo-poo on a longtime Yankee great, you know, maybe that makes the runway a little bumpier for him to land in New York and the Bronx. So maybe we'll see Carlos Correa. And I've heard that he's had conversations with Javi Baez about what the fan base is like. And, you know, for Carlos Correa to come in and tie a bow on everything free agency once the lockout concludes, I mean, that would be a pretty special signing. And like it doesn't look as if the Cubs are done yet. You know, I don't have an office on the fourth floor at Gallagher Way, so I'm not 100%. But, you know, if I had to use, you know, some of my baseball intuition after having conversations with Jed and, you know, the short conversation I've had so far with Carter Hawkins, I would have to guess that they're not done yet. I mean, this is a team that's going to compete, and I think they're going to just wait and see all the other moves that are made, and then it's go time.
Do you think they're willing to pay that sort of money for Correa, though? Is that going to be a problem?
I don't know. You know what's crazy to me is I don't fault a lot of teams that say, you know what, we're not going to give anybody a Fernando Tatis kind of deal. 14 years? I mean, think how much has changed or can change in 14 years. John, like 14 years ago, what were you doing? You're probably in elementary school. I mean, 14 years? I mean, no matter how fantastic a player is, I feel like that is just too presumptuous. It's too much. It's just a suggestion that they're going to be solid and efficient for that long. I mean, not everyone's Tom Brady. I saw a stat the other day. Tom Brady was drafted when Bill Clinton was president. I mean, how crazy does that actually sound? I don't see that many guys actually living up to a contract like that. And that's not to disparage any of the teams, because that's just the way of the world. However, you know, we've talked about it in our Marquee Sports Network studios, myself, my producers, and just having baseball conversations. A 14-year deal? I don't even know if I'd sign an accountant to a 14-year deal. Like, you know, things he could want a career change down the road. You know, he could get into he could be watching Treehouse Masters and all of a sudden want to become a carpenter or something like that. 14 years, that's too much. So when it comes to Correa and that money, you know, I honestly feel like the smart thing to do, 3 to 5 year deals for everybody. I mean, because just think of the wear and tear on a player. No matter the age, no matter what, everything has a cycle. And if you, you know, have a contract and you put the parameters out there that's longer than that player's, you know, productive cycle, then, I mean, shame on you, because you're going to be sitting there and you're going to be paying them down the road and you're going to be like, God, if we just wouldn't have signed Fernando Tatis Jr. to a 14-year deal, that could be a conversation that the San Diego Padres have with themselves in about 11 years. You know, hopefully not, because he's one of the brightest stars in baseball. He's a pleasure to watch. But I think that's when it comes to the Carlos Correa money, you have to be smart. You have to be smart money. And I think that's one thing that Jed's well aware of. He's going to go out there. He's going to make smart decisions. Do you get Carlos Correa at that price, or do you maybe get Trevor Story at a little bit lesser price? Because when you look at the comparing and contrasting, the numbers not that different. But then you have to put him in that vacuum once again and say, what were Trevor Story's numbers like at Coors Field? What were his numbers like away from Coors Field? What were Carlos Correa's numbers like, you know, versus American League, National League teams? There's so much that goes into it. I'm sure there's a gigantic binder that's somewhere out there when it comes to Carlos Correa. I'm sure his agent has built that there. I've seen it before at the Smithsonian. Once upon a time, I went there and saw Scott Boras's binder on Alex Rodriguez, and it was legit, like the thickness of War and Peace. It compared him to every possible shortstop that had been worth their salt over the last 50 years. And it was unbelievable. Now you know why a guy like Scott Boras has front row seats at almost every single stadium and has his own box at least 15 out of the 30 stadiums, because he makes moves like that. So we'll see.
How do you feel about that? Do you think that's a bit too much, or is that just him trying to be proactive for his client?
I think that's just Scott Boras. I mean, whether you like him or not, I think that's Scott Boras being the best at his job in the entire world. Because just to put things in perspective, I don't want to dig in anybody's pockets, but if you go and you look up Scott Boras's net worth, it's close to $500 million. Now, if you jump across lines and look at the next biggest agent in any sport, I mean, who would you think that it is?
Maybe Rich Paul, if I had to guess. That's just a guess from the NBA.
You know what? That's a good point, because Rich Paul is surely gaining steam with, you know, with LeBron James and Maverick Carter and those guys. However, Drew Rosenhaus. I mean, Drew Rosenhaus, he's been super agent for football stars for years. He even makes an appearance in the show Young Rock you know, because he was floating around the Miami campus, you know, trying to pick up with Warren Sapp and all those guys back in the day. Scott Boras has a net worth of close to $500 million. And if I'm not mistaken, Drew Rosenhaus is still net worth under $100 million. Now, it's all like Monopoly money. But when you think about it, baseball's got all that guaranteed money. And there's so many huge contracts. And Scott Boras has his hands right in the mix of it. So when his clients get paid, guess who else gets paid? Scott Boras gets paid. So I don't think it's, you know, him doing too much. I think that if I were a ball player and we had a chance, like, hey, we just got a call from Scott Boras's office. He wants to represent you. Are you like, no. He gets his players way too much money and way too many years on contract. I don't think anyone said that ever. So Scott Boras, I think he's doing all right. And he does his job just as good, if not better than anybody else in the entire business.
All right, here on Sports Talk Chicago. Cole, let's talk Bears now. How do you describe what you've seen this season from this team?
Well, I think that almost said it all, didn't it? I mean, you know, it's still, to me, it's disheartening, it's frustrating that Chicago, Illinois, United States of America, the third largest media market in the United States, yet they consistently spin their tires when it comes to putting together a quality football team. And I don't know where it starts at. You know, a lot of times when you see things that aren't on the right track, it's organizational. You know, we've heard some of those rumblings throughout the city. You know, do they need an entire revamp? We've seen the separation between Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy. And apparently at one point they were a total package deal. And it's like, it's almost like they're junior high kids. They're out, you know, egging someone's house or rolling toilet paper on them. And it's like, hey, come on out. We got caught. They got us. But like, and now Ryan Pace is like, hold on a second. I was just out for a nightly stroll. I wasn't with these guys. It's like, you know, and it all boils down to you, CYA. You got to cover yourself. And, you know, for Ryan Pace, I'm sure he enjoys his position. And knowing what he knows and seeing the product out there on the field, Matt Nagy not long for that position. So, you know, when it comes to the product that we've seen so far, it's all about development. And what we've seen out of Justin Fields, I don't think the Bears have done everything within their best effort to develop Justin Fields as the starting quarterback. And I feel like that could have been a byproduct of the Bears not having a quality quarterback for the last 50 years. No disrespect to Jim McMahon or Mitch Trubisky, the only two Pro Bowlers since 1970 in the modern era. But when you're Chicago, Illinois, when you're the Chicago Bears, and everyone always says, I say it myself, like when you talk about the Bears, you know, they're one of the original teams. They have this rich story tradition, but do they? Because the Bears haven't won a whole bunch over the last 25 years. And when it comes to recency bias, that's what you have to look at. I mean, you're pretty much right now chained to the fact if you don't have five straight winning seasons, you're not considered a winning team. And, you know, I almost feel like right now we're to the point when the Bears do have a winning season, that's the blip on the radar as opposed to them not having a winning season. And that's not what I don't want to continue to speak like this. I mean, this is the Chicago Bears. This is the same team that I rolled around with when I was a kid with a headband that said Sweetness. I had a Sweetness one. I had a Roselle one. Obviously, Jim McMahon and Walter Payton, they wore those Pete Rozelle headbands just to kind of, you know, shove it in his face. But that's what I want to go back to. I want to go back to, I mean, not 1986 when I was, you know, a child, obviously, and you had, you know, that youthful zest when it came to cheering for your team. But the Bears were a different monster back then. No pun intended when it comes to the monsters of the Midway, but they were a different kind of team. They were a different organization. And I feel like they can get back to that. But it all starts at the top. Whether it's Lewis Riddick as the new GM, whether it's Daniel Jeremiah, you know, either one of those guys, you know, from my time being around them and from what they know of the game, not to discredit Ryan Pace, but, you know, you get X amount of years to accomplish something, and he has not accomplished what, you know, a lot of people have, you know, set out for him. And, you know, sometimes you just have to clean house. And I'm not suggesting that that's exactly what gets done right now, but from what we've seen so far this season, there needs to be a change. And whether it's a guy like Lewis Riddick or a guy like Daniel Jeremiah, I mean, they could make some moves and they could have the Bears, you know, back as one of those teams that looks like they're from a top five media market in the United States.
What makes those two specifically good candidates?
Well, I mean, Lewis Riddick has been a candidate now for, it seems like, a few years. Every time a job opens up, it's like, well, Lewis Riddick, he's going to go. And that's, but you know, one thing that I can't say this was my barometer, but just the other day, you know, I saw some articles and I went and clicked on it and, you know, and listened to it. And Stephen A. Smith was saying, like, y'all better join Lewis Riddick while he's around here because he ain't going to be here too much longer. Like, that's kind of his way of saying, okay, there's going to be some GM jobs that are open. Lewis Riddick clearly qualified. I think that it would benefit a team if he were in their front office, maybe not in a general manager capacity even, maybe if it was as a consultant. But I feel like, you know, his football acumen, his knowledge of the game, it is next level. And he does know how to do those, you know, those front office comings and goings. And so that wouldn't be a problem for him. Daniel Jeremiah, I mean, he's a scout at heart, former quarterback at Appalachian State. I mean, just sitting and listening to him break film down and everything he knows when it comes to scouting the right players, I feel like when your GM is your best scout in the building, I think you'll be all right. And if that's the case for any, because I know that there were talks when the Jets had that open GM position, Daniel Jeremiah to go be the GM of the New York Jets. I don't think he wanted that job. I mean, he's a California guy. Why would you want to go live in New York City and then have to be the GM for the lesser of the two teams? Now, both of them right now, they're both not very good. But if you had to pick one, you know, with that lineage, I don't think people are saying, okay, well, yeah, the Jets, they won with Joe Namath. Like, come on, stop. We're not talking about stuff when color TV just came to pass. We're talking about a team that's won recently. And I think if you were going to be a GM of the two New York teams, you'd rather it be the New York Giants. So when all that speculation was wrapped around Daniel Jeremiah with the Jets, I think the job that he, like, in his heart of hearts, wants is the Chargers GM job. Maybe that opens up sometime soon. Maybe it doesn't, because the Chargers are, what, like I always say, the Chargers are nothing but the West Coast Miami Dolphins. They're not good. They haven't been good. They won't be good anytime soon. There's just so much more to do. They're the second fiddle in Los Angeles. I mean, it seems like they rent SoFi Stadium from the Los Angeles Rams. So I feel like if the right opportunity presented itself for either Lewis or DJ, then I think that, you know, they could help a team. They could help them win some games. And I would love if Daniel Jeremiah got hired as the Bears GM, because, you know, I worked with the guy for 6 years. I know him. I think that I would have maybe a little inside track when it came to some of that Bears knowledge. But what do I know? Maybe he'd get the job and he'd clam up and be like, I'm going to give you just as much as I give everybody else, as much as I give Dan Rohn, as much as I give this guy or that guy. So that's where I'm at when it comes to that general manager search. And the two of those guys, they look to be two pretty big candidates.
Let me ask you this. What's your evaluation of Justin Fields with this team, based on his talent, not based on maybe the coaching, the scheme, based on what you've seen talent-wise? What do you think of Justin Fields?
Well, you know, we've seen highs, we've seen lows, and I think that's going to come with any young quarterback. I mean, how many young quarterbacks do you see in year one just go out there and just throw boiling oil on everybody? It's a rarity. And the things that he has shown that are positive, you like to see that. The things that he needs work on, that's exactly why he needs work on it, because he's a young quarterback. And at the end of the day, you know, the NFC North is not the Big Ten, and the NFL is not the college football playoff system. It's a whole lot different. I mean, you've got guys, man, with their 300 pounds with six packs coming to break you. So for Justin Fields, you know, he saw that, you know, sacked often, you know, in a game or two, and you've seen the bruised ribs, and it just seems that with the inconsistent offensive line play, it's thrown him into the fire a little sooner than he would have liked. However, you know, when you play in the NFL and you play that position, I mean, I still contest it. It's probably the hardest position in all of sports, man. I mean, you know, we always had heard back in the day, Jack Lambert talking about, you know, quarterbacks, you know, he hates them. They're soft, they're weak. But hey, I tell you what, are you trying to go get tackled by Roquan Smith anytime soon?
No, like, thank you.
You just see these guys and you see how just banged up their arms are, like, as the game goes on, and just the scratches. And it's like, you like to think that you're tough, but I mean, can you imagine what it would be like if someone could just wave a magic wand over you and on Monday morning you felt like you played an NFL football game and actually played the bulk of the game? And that's what you're going to feel like on Monday morning. Like, you're like, and just when you get up and leave the gym, I'm 43 years old. and you get a halfway decent workout in, and you're walking like you're Fred Sanford around the house. So, you know, when it comes to Justin Fields, the things that I see from him, a lot of positives, but still a lot to work on. And there's no shame in that, because being a quality NFL quarterback, that is a work in progress. And I feel like with the right instructors, with the right coaching staff, with the right people in place, they're going to put the right pieces of the puzzle around him, then he can be successful. But it is the ultimate team sport. We all know that. I mean, if one piece of the puzzle goes down, you know, if that rook on the chessboard doesn't do what's necessary, you know, the queen is in jeopardy, essentially. So we'll have to see how things shake out with Justin Fields and with the rest of the Bears in order for him to be successful as time goes on.
Where do you see this team going? What's the direction that you can gauge right now?
Well, 1-2-3 Cancun seems to be the direction for after this season. You know, you get an extra game. I mean, that's going to delay. Maybe the prices will come down on those vacations for those guys, but I don't see them sneaking into the playoffs like they did last year. I mean, they were not a playoff team last year, even though they, by virtue of their record and, you know, the lack of positive play from other teams, they made the postseason. I don't see that happening this year. You know, it just seems as if they could, like we talked, they could just continue to spin their tires, and every time they do something well, they take that step back. Now, to be able to score 22 points versus the Arizona Cardinals, you know, that's something you can hang your hat on, but it was in a losing effort. And that's the third most amount of points they gave up all season long with those 33 to Arizona. But, I mean, between you and I and everyone that's listening, so I think the conversation just went from very small to very large. I think the Arizona Cardinals are the best team in the National Football League right now. And I picked them from the very beginning of the season to go to the Super Bowl, and I picked Kyler Murray as my MVP. Now, I think him being out for a few games, that may hurt his chances, but we did see Carson Wentz in 2017 win an MVP, but that's after his season was stopped short after he already put together an unbelievable body of work. Now, if Kyler Murray continues to shred the rest of the way into the postseason and he leads his team to the overall number one seed, then maybe, we'll see. But you even look at James Conner. I mean, we saw him with that crazy one-handed catch, taking him to the house. I mean, the dude is tied for second in rushing touchdowns. I mean, he's only behind Jonathan Taylor. He and Joe Mixon are tied for second. And James Conner is really going out there and showing, okay, I wasn't good enough in Pittsburgh. Well, guess where I am good enough? I'm good enough right now in Arizona, and we're a whole lot better than the Pittsburgh Steelers. And even A.J. Green. When A.J. Green is effective, I mean, you're just looking at this team when everybody is healthy, and you have Nuke Hopkins, A.J. Green, and Christian Kirk, and you have James Conner running with a full head of steam, this team is a problem. And even when Kyler Murray wasn't in it, there you have Colt McCoy going out there and just doing what needs to be done, going 2-1 as a starter. So, you know, it seems as if this Bears team, when they're in it, they're in it. They can play with the good teams, but they can't beat the good teams. So what does that mean? It probably means that they're, you know, an instructor, a coach, or, you know, someone that's going to, okay, put that game plan in there for them to go out there and to be able to close. Closing is one of the hardest things in all the National Football League. And we saw that, and it seemed to be a game of hot potato between the Lions and the Vikings. Like, do you want to win? Do you want to win? I don't want to win. Do you want to win? Do you want to lose? I don't want to lose. And it just seemed that they couldn't close. That's the difference between winning and losing teams. Winning teams go up there, drop the hammer, game's over. Losing teams, they let you stick around until it's anybody's ballgame. So with the Bears, if they want to be a winning team, you have to close games out. You have to run through the tape, and that's going to be the next step, not just for the Bears, but for Justin Fields and that quarterback.
More to come with Cole Wright in just a moment. Stay tuned. This is Sports Talk Chicago. Right, still here on Sports Talk Chicago. Cole, a few more questions before we finish up. First off, tell me about the 1996 IHSA State Championship baseball game. What happened?
We lost. We lost to Jason Wirth and Chatham Glenwood. That's what happened, essentially. But, I mean, I don't know. We had a lot. You know, I went back, and that game is on YouTube. And, you know, when I first got back working with the Cubs, you know, someone tweeted it out. So what did I do? Of course, there's not a whole bunch to do. I went back and watched it. Watched the game in its entirety. I think we made six or seven errors. As I'm sitting there as a 40-something-year-old watching this, I'm like, oh, you can't win ballgames making all those errors. I'm sitting there, like, cussing dudes out on the team, like, specifically, like, oh, Chris Rodriguez, you got to make that play. John Brock, what are you doing? And it's just like sitting there. You know, I DH'd that game. So, I, of course, I didn't have a hand in that one. So, you know, nothing to do there. But, yeah, we lost. I like to think that if you had a better game plan put in place and maybe move a few guys around here or there, maybe some things could have happened. But, you know, I don't want to be, you know, Al Bundy and Bubba Smith in the hallways at Polk High trying to go three-point stance lining up against each other. So, you know, what happened happened. And would I have liked to win a state championship? Absolutely. But, you know, it was still a pretty cool experience. A lot of newspaper clippings, you know, just a lot of cool memories. So, you know, can't take that one away.
What's your most prized memory playing baseball?
Wow. I don't know. I mean, you know, it sounds goofy because, you know, you go and play at a certain level and I feel like they all just kind of mix in together. But I do remember as a sophomore in high school, we were playing. I went to Waubonsie Valley High School out in Aurora. And for those familiar with the baseball field, it faces a big hill that everyone runs on. And you do all kinds of stuff. The bullpen for the home team is down the third baseline right on the left field fence. So we were playing East Aurora. East Aurora, not very good. There's a guy that we used to play summer ball with. His name was Tommy Popdan. Tommy, if you're out there listening, maybe you'll remember this. So I was warming up. I didn't pitch very much in summer league, if at all. So I was warming up, and Tommy was playing left field, and we were blowing him out. He's like, I didn't know you pitched. I'm like, oh, yeah, I do. Just wait and see. So then third out gets made. I go to jump the fence, and the little short fence that has, like, the little pokies on top, and it snags my pants, and I fall over the fence trying to jump the fence. So I'm sitting there with my pants snagging the fence, hanging. I have to, like, prop my foot up and get off, and they're all laughing. So I told Tom, like, you're going to be laughing in a minute. Went out there, threw an immaculate inning, 9 straight pitches, pop, 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 9 straight fastballs, inning over. And albeit it was versus East Aurora, they may have won about 5 games that year, but I still remember that. Like, from getting laughed at, from not even being able to make the correct entrance, falling over the fence and getting poking holes in my pants, to throwing an immaculate inning. You know, and I really didn't even pitch that much. Sophomore year, I didn't pitch junior year or senior year of high school, and then I picked it back up in college. So I still remember that. 9 straight pitches. It doesn't happen very often, even if it is at a lower level, but I'll take what I can get.
Well, Cole, thank you so much for joining me. Always a pleasure to have you on. Best wishes with Marquee, with the Bears, and with the Cubs, and can't wait till we catch up again soon. Really appreciate it.
Hey, anytime, man. Happy holidays to you, John.
Great talk there with Cole Ryder. That'll do it for us today here on Sports Talk Chicago. Big thank you to Cole Ryder himself, Matt Dubiel, WCKG, Jim DeTalbin, to Marlboro Entertainment for making this show a success. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at John Z Sports and on Facebook at John Zagluel. If you want to watch more of this show, search up Sports Talk Chicago, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and SportsTalkChicago.com. Another great show comes with tomorrow. Thank you so much for listening. Till then, stay safe. So long, everyone.
No! No! Where are the turtles?